You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TMG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Journey's End. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Diane from Nebraska.
Oh, I did not expect that.
Did I hear that? Did I hear somebody else from Nebraska? Yes, I don't know if you got my email, James, but I said there might be a surprise on something, our first for our podcast. And sitting next to me in my luxurious basement studio...
I don't have a studio.
No, I don't either. I think you've seen video of this room, messy as it is, and things thrown all over, boxes, empty boxes. I got a box with a stove exhaust fan that I still have to get installed. How long have we had that? A year and a half?
Probably.
Yeah, maybe. So, anyway, she tends to talk a little low, so, but can you hear her okay?
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so, Diane.
Yes?
Why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, because that's the surprise. She has never been on our show.
That is correct. I've never been on the show. I'm very, very excited because I do like to collect anything and everything Native American. So I'm looking forward to this podcast show.
Yep. So we watched it 2 weeks ago and we took notes. So she has written notes. I like to type mine. I think it's fast. I type like 63 words a minute. So it's faster for me to type than it is to write it. But especially since I can't read my own writing. So, all right. And you generally don't like Star Trek, right?
Right. The only one that I will watch is Star Trek Voyager. But I don't understand why they have an actor who is acting like a Native American, but he's actually
Hispanic.
Mexican.
Yeah,
he's Hispanic. That is very odd.
Oh. James, what are your thoughts?
By the way, so just being further away from here, we're not particularly kind of aware of how sensitive that may or may not be, kind of like here in Europe. So, is that commonplace that
African
Americans would be cast?
Yeah, it's not really a big deal. I mean, Garrett Wong is a prime example, isn't he? Isn't he Chinese and he plays a Korean?
Yeah.
So I mean. That happens. No. I don't. Okay. So, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
She's got beautiful blue eyes, guys. So, just want to throw that out there.
You better look that way, not in my eyes, or you'll lose focus.
Yeah, I'm going to lose focus completely. So, and of course, James, you met her in 2016 in Las Vegas.
It's so long ago now, right?
It feels
it's crazy long ago.
I think he was about a foot above you, taller than you, if I remember.
Everyone's taller than me.
Yeah. We visited the M&M thing, and what was it? The Coca-Cola one?
Oh yeah. On the strip.
And
what was really interesting was when we took him to a grocery store, and he was total in awe of everything that was sold in our grocery stores that he's never seen before because they don't sell them there.
Right. Yep. So
remember that, James?
I do. It was it's always odd finding the differences between countries, and maybe it's even the same between different states in the US. I don't know, but you assume things are very similar, but the little things are always different.
Right. Yeah, they are. Hey, Diane, what's a boot? What is a boot?
A boot?
Yeah.
What's a snow boot?
It could be. But what do you do with the boot?
You put them on, and on then what? You walk through snow.
So
what?
You put them on your feet?
Yes.
Not over there, they don't. The boot is that thing we call the trunk of our car.
Really? Okay.
She needs to talk to you more, James.
Yeah, but we also use the word boot can mean shoes as well.
Yeah, of course.
And the flat. I don't understand. Flat is an apartment there. Is that true,
yes,
James?
Yeah. That's right. So whenever you an apartment, you'd very, very rarely refer to it as an apartment. It'll be a flat. Even if it's like an apartment in a building that has more than one level, you would probably still call it a flat.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read the Harry Potter books. Have you read them?
I have not, but my kids have. And okay. Before that, I suppose going back nearly 20 years or however long it's been, my wife did when they first came out.
Yeah, and how they had to change some of the wordings in the Harry Potter books to get Americanized.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
I was like, okay, I didn't know about that, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, then.
So the thing that's going to come up straight away is that, Lou, you don't have headmasters, right?
No, they're principals. They're called and Chris would be a teacher, not a master.
No, we are teachers are not called masters.
Oh, I thought it was master and headmaster.
But the head teacher will be the headmaster or headmistress if it's a woman.
Hmm.
Remembering back to Harry Potter and Dumbledore.
Okay. Yeah. Better. Okay. Yeah. We had to split our audio two ways, so it kind of degrades the sound a little bit. So I had to turn you up. Huh. So all right. Yeah. Okay. Well then, I guess we should probably roll. Okay, so the synopsis for tonight's episode. Do you want to read that?
Okay. As a result of a long disputed treaty with the Cardassians, the Federation has agreed to return several planets to Cardassian control. One such planet, Dorvin 5, is inhabited by descendants of Native Americans. They do not wish to leave their new home, which they had spent many years searching for.
Do you remember how many years?
200 years.
Hey! All right. Okay, so this is the 20th episode of Season 7 of TNG. First aired on March 28th, 1994. Guest starring Tom Jackson as Lakanta? I'm bad with names. Natalia Nugulich as Alana Nechayev, Ned Romero as Anthwara, George Aguilar as Wasaka, Richard Poe as Ivek, Eric Minyuk as the Traveler, the creepy Traveler, remember him? Doug Wirt as Jack Crusher. So what do we think about this episode? There's a special appearance today. I almost miss him. I did. Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher, the disgruntled Starfleet cadet. So what do we think about this episode? And as the guest, you get to go first. What are your initial thoughts? Just, brief initially what you thought of it.
I had thought that this show was very interesting. My thought is because of the political decision of the Enterprise, right?
Federation.
Federation The Indians have to move again after they settled for 20 years on this planet. It's basically history repeating itself, mm-hmm. because our history in America has been moving the Indians from one place to another and did not make them happy.
Mm-mm. Okay. Okay, I'm pretty brief. This is one of my favorites. This does go on car rides, as you know, James. That's how I scale which ones I like the most. It's a very interesting way to place Native Americans in the 24th century story. But I am curious, you know, number one, how they really knew Picard's ancestor was Javier something. Why would they be calling them Indians in the 24th century, not Native Americans? So it's interesting, but irrelevant. James, how about you?
So this is a strange episode in that I really don't have a lot of kind of cultural background to appreciate. I don't think a lot of the stuff going on with the Native American kind of like a subplot. Or probably plot as it actually is, but overall, I think this is like Wesley's last appearance, right? And that's kind of like what it's famous for before he kind of goes off and joins the Traveler, mm-hmm. Which is I don't know. I think that the Wesley thread. Actually, there are a couple of things going on here, right? We're beginning to see the Deep Space Nine marquee kind of setup. Be put in place. We're beginning. We're ending the Wesley storyline. We're getting him to step out and kind of, you know, go along with the Traveler that we've seen a couple of times. I think it's a kind of it's a strangely kind of pivotal episode for a lot of things. But in terms of the Native American stuff, which then obviously then feeds into Voyager, right? I'd be kind of interested to hear your guys' thoughts and. Kind of like views on that, because it's something that we really don't get much, you know, exposure to here in Europe.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, obviously we weren't very good to the indigenous people, as they're sometimes called. The fact that, you know, we just took their land from them and said, you know, in return, you get this little spot over here, or you're going to have one of that piece of property over there. It's amazing what we did to them. That was so long ago that, you know, obviously, I don't think any of my ancestors being, well, I mean, now that I think about it, we are supposedly long, long distant ancestors of, the Sioux tribe. So I probably have less than 12% Sioux in me at all. Diane has none. My ancestors traditionally come from Italy. My mom was maybe Irish, German, and I don't think any of them displaced Native Americans. So, if anything, I'm a descendant of the victims of our displacement. So, but you're right. Bringing them onto this episode is curious. Because, why? What point was it, except for, did they really think about Voyager this far in advance? As DS9 was, what, in its second or third season at this time?
So at this point, DS9 is in its second season. It is doing like the marquee storyline at this point. Voyager is in pre-production, so they are. I'm sure they've written Caretaker. I'm sure they've kind of put together the cast in for things like for Chakotay and have the kind of the basic outlines of the characters. That certainly is there. And I always feel like this is this one, and then also coming up later, Preemptive Strike, right? These are kind of like soft launch pads for Voyager that comes up later.
Okay. Well, maybe they did. All right. So, as we start out, we're at Starbase 310 for a meeting with Admiral Nechayev. But first, we get to pick up a member of the family. Wesley comes on board, and he looks depressed, doesn't he?
Very.
He just doesn't look like himself. Maybe he was scared of Data's threat to call security, perhaps?
Probably.
No, I don't think so. what do you think, besides the flight accident that killed one of his fellow cadets, what do you think made him so disgruntled? James?
What? Actually, how old is Wesley, by the way? What do we think he is at this point? Like 18 or so?
Yeah.
Or is he supposed to be older? Because I always get the impression that they like send him away to, you know, to Starfleet Academy or to college, you know, pre-puberty, right? And that gets him back a completely different guy than what they sent out. You know, when he goes off to Starfleet Academy, he's very much, yeah, he I think he's very childlike, very much of the opinion that, you know, he has to go to Starfleet, he's going to go and work for Starfleet, just because that's how it's always been laid out for him. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that he had a, you know, maybe a bit of an awakening or whatever. Maybe just slept in late a couple too many mornings and fell behind with his studies. I don't know.
Well, I kind of did a little look, and Will Wheaton was born in July of 1972, and this episode came out in March of 94, so that would be roughly 22 years. But, you know, you figure production time, he was 21 at the time that this was created, and this is season 7, so obviously he was, you know, just a teenager when this started 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, what, 15?
Yeah, but I always think that he's supposed to be playing, basically he's supposed to be younger than Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. So yeah, I'm figuring the character probably was about 18, or I wonder if I could find that out, actually.
I mean, you can, of course, that's Memory Alpha. It'll give you all of the information.
Oh yeah, definitely. Let me see here. Wesley Gresher. And says born 2348, so that doesn't solve any mystery, because I don't know what year this was supposed to be in.
Okay, 2370.
2370?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm wrong. It's Wesley is exactly the same age as Will Wheaton, so he's supposed to be 22.
Yep, so that's what it looks like. Okay. So what do you think about having Admiral Nechayev on board? Isn't she always fun?
She's always great.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you knew this, but we did interview Natalia on the Lou Trek show.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
No,
Diane won't know that at all.
No, you bring this up every time we speak.
Ah, do we?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, a lot of people are complaining that in Star Trek Picard. In particular, like in the first season of Star Trek Picard, you got that very sweary admiral that was kind of always putting Picard down. But look, we've been doing this for decades, right? you know, maybe in a slightly more PG way, but Admiral Nechayev has Picard completely around her little finger. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, people are complaining a little bit about the female admirals at the moment, but it's got a long, long history.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It seems like, yeah, most of the admirals that Picard's dealt with are female. And I especially like the one that calls him Captain. Assemble your fleet, Captain. Remember her? She was funny.
No, when was that?
Oh, he wanted to do a blockade from the Romulans.
In Redemption.
Redemption, yes. Yeah, so he had to talk to the admiral about doing the blockade, and she says, you know, assemble your fleet, Captain. She had that accent, and I don't know if I've done it as good as she does. But okay, so
I'm going to go out to the limit and reckon probably not.
No, probably not. So Geordi in this one seems a little odd as well. Just jump in whenever you want on your notes there. If I go past something, then you just jump in. But Jordy, okay, so first he asks Wesley, hey, are you going to lounge around while everybody else has work? And then he tells him, relax, you're on vacation. Only to end up with, but don't be too relaxed.
Yeah. Well, relax, but get to work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we need you, but we don't want you. But you need to do some work while you're here. But relax, because that's why you're here. I don't know. Thoughts?
I don't think Geordi's been particularly... I mean, he's not... Look, he's not picking up on the fact that Wesley wants to sleep and he wants to be by himself. And, you know, I mean, I know that Wesley's been a bit of a stroppy teenager, but he is a stroppy teenager. You know, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel that, yeah, you know, Geordi is... I think Geordi's a little out of line here, getting so upset that that my moody teenager won't talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you going to expect? What can you expect?
Yeah. You know, what I'm curious about is if people need to get from one part of Deck 36 to the other part, do they really walk through engineering to do it? I mean, because
Is that how he called Wesley?
Yeah, he was just walking by. Yeah, he was just walking by. Wes! Because you could see the look on his face. Of, oh, yeah. Come take a look at this. And then it went downhill from there. But yeah, it looked like he was just walking through engineering. So I find it curious that anybody could just walk through engineering. I want to walk through engineering.
No, realistically, the whole deck should be off. it should be out of access for most people, right? And I would imagine that would include Wesley, unless he's been given specific permissions.
Mm-hmm.
Louis, remember you were watching that YouTube show about looking at the ship of Voyager? I wonder if they have a YouTube of ship.
Yeah, YouTube has everything. YouTube there's a video on there I saw that has a cutout of the ship deck by deck and what everything is on Voyager, where it's at on Voyager. And it's like, I don't know how they've determined all that stuff because they never talk about all those little rooms. Wasn't there a tank for a whale or something? A whale tank or something crazy like that? So it's like, where would they have gotten this stuff from? So anyway, what have you got you want to jump in on, hon?
Nothing. I just got it from the planet on.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So, but Admiral, Picard's really trying to kiss up to the Admiral, you know, sandwiches that she likes, Valerian canapes. I wonder what a Valerian canape is.
I don't know, but I'll try it.
Wasn't it watercress sandwiches that I think Riker said? Watercress sandwiches, Valerian canapes. You up for promotion?
Okay, the thing I'm going to moan about here slightly is that the canapes, right? I assume there's more than one type of canape that they do that can fall under this particular, you know, name. So you might have just got really the bad stuff. I don't know. It's like whenever they have like Tarkadian tea, it's like there's only one tea on Tarkadia.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Yes. Well, I mean, if you go to France and ask for French fries, they're not going to know what they're talking about either, too. So, you know, can I have some French fries? Some what?
French toast. So, but,
yeah, French toast.
Okay, maybe I'm just completely, I've got this around the wrong way. Maybe Tarkadian tea isn't tea from Tarkadia at all. Maybe it's just what we call a particular type of tea because we reckon it's what the Tarkadians like.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that the French fries aren't exactly French.
No, they're not. So, okay. But, no, we ain't got time. Because I noticed that she doesn't eat any of her sandwich or her Valerian canapé. She didn't even have any tea. What kind of tea was it? I don't remember.
I don't have that in my notes.
I didn't put it either. But I noticed that the whole time she was in there giving him his order, she didn't eat one bite. So, man, poor replicator did its job and Nobody was interested in it.
Well, they probably redid the scene over and over and over again. And finally they said, you don't have to eat no more after the 15th take.
Yeah. And they just, you know, they filled her up and then said, no more, I can't take it no more. It's like, what did I hear about, if I remember, Marina Sirtis hates chocolate ice cream. So every time she had to put a piece of chocolate ice cream in her mouth, she had the bucket nearby to just get rid of it. That's fun. We don't get to see that on the show. Do you think Picard might have walked around the bridge with those sandwiches? Hey, you want some? We got sandwiches here. Or did he just throw it away?
Like leftovers.
Leftovers, yeah. We got leftovers. I don't know about that. Okay, so now let's talk about the mission. Picard has to evacuate Dorvan 5, where ancient North American colony exists. So, like Diane said, we get to repeat history all over again. First, it was, wasn't it Christopher Columbus that started the whole thing, supposedly? And now, the Cardassians. What do you think of that?
I basically think that they should have left everything alone and just let the Indians stay where they were. Yeah. Because they've moved around so many times that I'm sure future Indians hated it.
I would imagine. So, why do you think, I mean, what would have been the purpose of redrawing all the border all over again to just to put in this demilitarized zone, you think, James?
Hang on, you mean that why is the border now different than how it was like 5 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, what would have been the point?
I mean, I would have thought that they've lost land or other, you know, people have lost certain planets on the Cardassian side that have been taken over and certain planets on the Federation side have been taken over, I would have thought. Mm-hmm. So it's probably just that, you know, this is where things stood. After the, you know, given kind of the various incursions or the various kind of land grabs that there would have been. And then the other thing, of course, right, is that, look, if, let's say that this particular system is like an enclave inside Cardassian space, so it's surrounded by other Cardassian systems that the Cardassians kind of reached out for because they had, you know, they had strategic importance, or they had, you know, that whole load of dilithium on, or whatever it happened to be. You can always find yourself in a situation where you have to give up on the land because it's effectively behind enemy territory.
Okay. So you're going to, I think, James, you're better at the minute details. Like, for instance, is this the point where the Maquis would be introduced because of this border change now? And so now not only do we get Ensign Ro, or we have Ensign Ro, don't we?
So we have Ensign Ro. We don't have Ensign Ro collect the freedom fighter yet.
Okay. So she's going to be coming on here shortly.
Yeah, two episodes or so.
Okay, so then the Maquis at the end of this season and the Maquis starting in DS9 are all a result of this border redraw.
Yeah, that's right. It's effectively the imperfect peace, the imperfect treaty that comes in after the, you know, after the after the end of the war that kind of effectively flares up, you know, local resistance. And I can't remember, but I can't remember the stuff on the Maquis side, but there's also this issue of people being suspicious of people living inside the demilitarized zone. With, you know, you had your colony, they had their colonies. I think people started getting worried that the other colony was starting to get weapons, and they thought that they were kind of preparing for an invasion. So that was also heightening kind of heightening people's kind of worries and fears. So, but it's basically all after, you know, after the, you know, after quote unquote the peace treaty was kind of like rolled out in practice, it's like it's the people living along the border that have to deal with the new reality, and that's really where all the marquee stuff comes from.
Yeah. You know, I know I'm jumping ahead, but if I don't, I'll never remember it. I wonder what happened. Now we know that eventually these people get to stay on the planet, but they're under Cardassian rule. So I'd be curious to know what happened to them during the Dominion Wars.
Well, I'd like to believe that these guys are just easy enough to leave by themselves, right? These guys don't seem like a threat. These guys seem like, you know, you say that they're under Cardassian rule, but effectively, you know, what does that actually mean for this kind of, you know, these kind of people? They're not doing kind of Federation-y kind of stuff, right?
Right.
They're just, you know, they're sitting, living a kind of like a peaceful existence on their own planet without... No, they're not making runs back and forth to Earth. They're not dealing with Starfleet. They don't need ships to be sent over to them for supplies or anything like that. So it's, you know, I'd like to believe that when we say Cardassian rule, it's more of, you know, more arm's length, and people wouldn't really, you know, their life hopefully wouldn't change. And then hopefully what that means is that when the Dominion come in and they start really kind of wiping out these colonies that have put up any resistance, I would hope that this one is... one that doesn't, you know, make their hit list because they haven't been like resistant.
Hmm. Or but maybe
I'm sure there's a book. Someone's written a book.
Yeah, but or maybe Traveler Wesley keeps protected. Do you think he gave him the power of the Traveler?
Because, so what do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, the Traveler has powers. So
okay. Does he have
now?
Powers? But does he have? Does Wesley have powers, or does he merely have kind of knowledge? And so I never read. I never kind of like assumed the Traveler had like, you know, magic power. Mm. As in, I always felt that it was stuff that he had learned, and he is able to do stuff through kind of like a closer connection to, you know, warp bubbles or whatever the situation happens to be.
Okay. All right. So, okay, so here we now get to meet these people, and they tell their story that it took them 200 years to find this planet, you know, because the mountains, the rivers, the skies welcome them. Why would they want to spend another 200 years to find what they already have? Thoughts on that one, dear? They spent 200 years to find it, and now they don't want to give it up. I mean, the mountains, the rivers, the skies. I mean, what do you think that really means to them? I mean, I know in we learn a lot in Tattoo in Voyager, right? So, but you have to, you can't nod. You have to say yes on an audio podcast here. It's her first time on any show, so she's...
It's just basically everything around them, the air, the mountains, and anything. It's basically their spirits, their, you know, their way of communicating with their ancestors. And if they move, they don't want to move because... they don't feel like their ancestors are anywhere else but there. Okay. That's why it took them over 200 years to find the perfect place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now after 20 years, they are asked to move again.
All right. Okay. So, you know, I'm curious, James, unless you have something on that.
No, carry on.
Okay, the Vision Quest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that? How can Jack Crusher come to Wesley like that? It would seem to me that that's just Wesley's own subconscious filling in details that he already knows. Do you think it was, or Chakotay with his father? Are we to believe that they're actually able to talk to the people that have died in real time, or?
I believe so. I believe, you know, they just think about it and they're talking, they're communicating.
Huh. And then from the perspective of the kind of the show, I mean, I think that the kind of, you know, the scientific sci-fi-ish rationalist view is kind of really summarized by you know, Dr. Crusher here, which is that she obviously doesn't believe this. She kind of puts out, I can't remember if she puts out like another theory or not, but yeah, I mean, I think their view would have been that this is just something internal to Wesley, which still doesn't necessarily mean that it's not valid, right? It's completely valid for him to have to have kind of experienced this and to have walked through this and to have him to have allowed this experience to have clarified his thoughts. I mean, at the end of the day, Wesley is allowed to do what he likes to do, right? I don't think that people aren't really, you know, he has agency over his life.
Hmm. Okay. Because he meets this Indian named Lakanta, who turns out to be the traveler. And since he is the one who pushed him to do a vision quest, of course, he didn't push him. He threw the breadcrumbs for Wesley to follow and then decide he wanted to do it himself, which was always going to come to that. So I wonder how much of that is really his father and how much of that is the traveler just trying to get him to come with him. I mean, was Wesley free to say no?
Yeah, so I never felt there's any manipulation by the traveler. Right. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm naive here. And especially since he's kind of, you know, the traveler's been grooming Wesley since season one. Maybe I might be mistaken. But I never get the impression that the traveler's doing anything other than, you know, opening the door and letting Wesley walk through rather than, you know, manipulating him.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, that does make sense. Because obviously he can see something in him that he wants to bring out. Okay. So, I'm not sure I agree with Picard when he says that, you know, sometimes the greater good demands certain sacrifices be made. And I think their argument was, is yes, and sometimes you sacrifice too much.
I agree. I just don't understand it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. All right. So Wesley beams down and finds his vision quest where his father says, "Don't follow me. Do your own path. Make your own, be your own man." And so Wesley takes that as, "I need to resign from the academy." However, don't we see him in a uniform again in the future?
Yeah, we do. And okay, so this is obviously a nemesis. We see Wesley. This has always felt a little bit uncomfortable. I don't understand why they bring back Wesley. And they also bring back Wesley in a manner that kind of suggests he's back doing his thing in Starfleet. And isn't he like lieutenant at that point as well? So it's not even that. So I think I've read somewhere that suggested that he wasn't really in Starfleet. He was just borrowing a uniform. I can't even remember where that came from. But I would have just rather him not be in Nemesis. You know, there's no reason for him to be there. And as far as I remember, isn't he like the one furthest to the left in the wedding scene that he could have easily been cut out? So I would much rather have kind of the true story behind where Wesley has been and really get to understand, you know, what his story is rather than him just appearing out of nowhere in Nemesis for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've got a picture of him on screen. He's got the one pip and Yeah, he's in full uniform. Did the traveler like give him a vacation, or did he have a? Well, I've learned all there is to learn about traveling, so go back to Starfleet. That is odd. They don't explain it.
Did he go back to Starfleet?
No, it's just that's isn't that the only scene we even see him in?
Yeah, actually. So here's the thing. This room. Okay, I just googled this while we were talking. There's supposed to be a deleted scene with Wesley in Nemesis where he's talking to Picard that kind of explains a bit of the backstory. But I don't know. Look, if you're going to cut out the scene that explains why he's there, also cut out the scene where he's sitting there. It just doesn't seem... It seems unfortunate.
Well, they had to pay him a lot of money to do it, so they probably...
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, I don't think they would have paid him anything, or they would have paid him, you know, whatever the union rate is. I can't imagine they've paid him a lot for this.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably more than we make in a day.
Okay, I would be surprised. No, I can't believe that Wesley's that expensive.
So
how much is Wesley Crusher?
Yeah, what's he worth to us?
So after this episode, do we eventually find out what he is doing in the future?
Nope.
No?
Mm-mm. No, that's the thing. They bring him in for a wedding scene.
Well, his mother works as a doctor, so...
Yeah.
Of course, once in a while, he probably wants to go visit her and whatever.
Oh, in the old doctor's home. Don't you remember that part?
Oh, yeah.
I'll come visit you every Sunday in the old doctor's home. Okay, so after that meeting, they decide let's take a break and invite the Indians aboard the Enterprise to have a little get-together where we find out that
One second. Will Wheaton is 50 this year?
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry. That's all my interjection. I remember watching him. Obviously, as the inevitable march towards 50 occurs for everyone, but I am really surprised by that. Doesn't life go fast? Okay, sorry.
Still looks pretty good for 50.
Yeah, he hasn't changed.
No, I don't disagree. He does look like he's very much a baby face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like in the Big Bang Theory. You know, I like it. I loved it when Will came on the Big Bang Theory. It's, you know, always exciting to get Sheldon going. So, okay. All right. So here we are. We're in 10 forward. We're having this interesting thing. And that's where Enthwar talks to Picard about, you know, getting to know him, and they exchange information, and then, you know, Picard says, my ancestors, well, and he starts to explain his ancestry as the camera moves over to Wesley and Beverly about why he's late. We'll talk later. I would have liked to have heard Picard's story of his ancestors to determine how it goes with what Enthwar knows about Picard's ancestor and the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. I wish we could have learned more about Picard's side of that story versus...
His background, yeah.
Hearing about Javier Marabona Picard.
Would have been interesting.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's Enthwar says that the Picard family has had a stain of blood that's lasted 23 generations. And obviously Picard wouldn't have a clue. And it's interesting that Javier Marabona was named Picard. His lineage goes back so far, but I'm curious, how would they even know that that person was a soldier? in for the Spaniards, or they call them the Spanish overlords. How do you think, James? I mean, how would they have had that kind of records?
Well, I would have thought that they would basically, I mean, so if they're not going to be a soldier, what else are they going to be at that stage? I would have thought they're just hiring everyone with the same brush. Yeah. So the people that kind of came across would have been, you know, they're not exactly, you know, the first wave are not exactly going to be, you know, medics and other things, even though I'm sure there would have been a few of them. The thing that I find slightly frustrating. Look, when you look at your ancestors, right? Very few of your ancestors share your surname, right?
Right.
So, first of all, it's only on your dad's line that any of them share your surname, and even then, not everyone will, right? So you can have, I mean, the direct line, sure, but then you're going to have people connected, you know, spawning and off that, and everything up your, you know, up your mother's line is going to not have any shared surname whatsoever. Mm. So it's always the case when they have to suggest that there's an ancestor, that you always have to make it up the dad's line so that you can actually have a shared surname. And I always find it odd. They always do this, even though statistically it's very unlikely. So, you know, Lou, if you actually had someone in your background that was like in your ancestor lineage that was a real nasty person, yeah, it's very unlikely that they're going to share your surname.
Right. That's what I was thinking. 23 generations to keep the same name. So, okay. So, yeah, we learn a little bit about the Pueblo Revolt of 1680, where Indians, it says, rose up to overthrow their Spanish overlords and drive them out of what's now called New Mexico. So, I mean, obviously, you know, these Indians, group of Indians, tried to take back the land in New Mexico. And then 10 years later, the Spanish returned to reconquer the land. And that's where we get Javier Maribona Picard. But, okay, all right. So, how do we... Oh, did you notice Gully Veck was there?
Yeah, he's in the Maquis, right? They're bringing him in as a... as kind of like, you know, another kind of like a standalone goal, right?
Yeah.
They've obviously got Ducat that appears a lot in DS9, but he's kind of like, you know, he's number two at this stage.
Right. Yeah, Golovec. I do like Golovec. I will say that.
And he's the guy that isn't he the guy that grabbed O'Brien? Didn't O'Brien? Isn't he the guy that caught O'Brien?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he arrested him.
Yeah, I thought so as well. Okay. Let me just. I'll find the memory alpha link.
Yeah, there's two. He's Miles O'Brien. He's kind of like a, he is the 24th century Irishman, big time. And yeah, there's a couple interesting episodes with O'Brien. So you'll have to watch it. Diane, you got anything you want to bring up off your notes?
No.
Okay. Am I covering it all?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Cool. So here come the Cardassians to inspect their property. They're going to take an inventory of what everything is going to be left. And when Wesley comes out of his vision quest with Papa, he comes out to find him and stirs up the Indians and pushes back the Cardassians. And it's amazing that the Cardassians actually backed down. I wouldn't have expected that.
Right, I think at this moment, I think the Cardassians, in particular, Evek seems to be less of a complete nutcase than like Ducat is. I think he knows how far he can push things before escalating. He seems to be a guy that's been on the front line and has seen action.
Yeah.
So I think that he obviously kind of like throws his weight around, but I think he also knows, you know, when to when to step back a little bit, when there's really no need for him to kind of escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But just as this fighting begins, Wesley actually is able to stop it by screaming, "No!" So, is it the fighting continued? But Wesley was just... Did Wesley actually stop time itself? I think the traveler said he stepped out of their time. But if he stepped out of their time, why are they still frozen?
So I always interpret this that he's experiencing stuff in nanoseconds, and everyone else is, you know, in everyone else's nanoseconds, he's able to experience things. So he's a bit like a super speedy X-Man mutant kind of thing. Right. So he steps out, and everyone is frozen from his perspective as he kind of processes, and he can kind of talk to the traveler and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that Wesley had the power to do that.
Actually, I think if you start thinking about how it's possible, I think it's not particularly easy. I don't know how to explain this, right? And this is, I always try to find the kind of scientific explanation. There's no scientific explanation of Wesley being able to stop time, yet to interact with someone.
Yeah. But he does. He stops time. And then, you know, he's walking away with the traveler as the fight continues. So, okay. But Evek decides to not start another war with the Federation since, like he says, he lost two of his three sons in the war and he doesn't want to lose the third. So what do you think happens in the future with the Dominion War? All right. Well, I don't think we have much to mention except for, you know, here comes the Traveler, and he recruits Wesley to the Traveler.
So overall, I mean, are we satisfied? Are we satisfied with Wesley's kind of story, right? Does this put the cherry on top of his kind of his story? Would it have been better not to have this episode from Wesley's character's perspective, right? Because like the last time we saw him was in the First Duty, if I am not mistaken.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, we know he's at the academy. We know that he kind of stepped off the straight and narrow slightly, but he kind of came through and he kind of like reasserted himself with that all kind of unpleasantness. Now I'm kind of, if we didn't have this episode, we just assume Wesley's getting on with his life and making his way through through various Starfleet commissions here and there. Do we really need this episode? And is it nice that Wesley effectively just disappears and goes on a... I mean, in Europe, we have a concept of... I don't know if you guys have this, but, you know, when you go to college, people can take a... People take a year out. We call that a gap year in England. And it's basically, I'm going to go around Europe backpacking to find myself, or I'm going to head off to India to walk around the mountains. It almost feels like that's what Wesley's doing at the moment. He spent 3 years at college, and now he's taking a year off to go and find himself, backpacking around the cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as he's keeping himself warm on those other planes, dimensions, planes of existence, I believe she said it was. Now, did you notice any oops when Beverly was talking with Wesley about the Traveler before the Traveler actually revealed himself in this? I mean, she said, do you remember the alien from... She said...
Yeah, they signposted a bit, don't they?
Signposted?
They mention the Traveler before the Traveler appears.
Yes, they did. Yes. However, there's a couple things about that I noticed. She calls him an alien from Tal Ceti.
Yeah.
But it was actually Tal Alpha C, that the Traveler is supposedly from. But one of the things interesting about...
Hang on. So why do I remember Tau Ceti then?
I don't know. Because, I mean...
Because they have mentioned Tau Ceti before.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Tau Ceti was, but in the when we first meet the Traveler with Kaczynski, they said Tau Alpha C. And then in Remember Me, when everybody was disappearing from Wesley, or from Beverly, they mentioned Tau Alpha C again. But in this one, it's Tau Ceti. And I'm pretty sure of that. But, and, you know, it's just an oops. The only other thing is when the Traveler was talking to Picard about Wesley way back in season one, he said, you must not tell him any of this, especially the mother.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So I was like, yeah. Oh, how does she even know about that? Yeah, that Picard. Hey, I'm going to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody about it. Blabbermouth Picard. Okay. So, anyway, the...
But by the way, you're right. The thing about Tau Ceti, I think the reference that I'm getting is that I think it was referenced in Conspiracy. So it's supposed to be the place where Picard met Walter Keel. And then later he introduced Jack Crusher to Beverly. So I think that's where it comes from. That's where I think my recollection of Tau Ceti comes from. But no, you are right. It is Tau Alpha C.
Okay, cool. Yeah, oh, obviously.
How could they get that wrong? How could they get that wrong?
They probably remember, hey, where was that travel? It was Tau something. Look it up. And they just found Tau Ceti. So,
look it up. Nah, we're good.
Yeah. Where do you want me to look it up? Memory Alpha. Oh, wait, there was no such thing. No such thing as Memory Alpha then. Okay, so...
You do know where Memory Alpha comes from in universe, though, right?
No.
As in the Star Trek universe has a planet called Memory
Alpha. Oh, that's right! That's right, it was in the original series.
Yeah, yeah. I always... I mean, it's one of the nerdy things, right? Is that the Star Trek wiki is called Memory Alpha on the back of that. It's great.
Yeah, I do like that. You're right. That is a geeky thing. So, okay. So, Evek orders Cardassians beamed up, and obviously behind the scenes during the commercial break, they did a little talking and decided that they were going to somehow peacefully coexist with each other. And I find it interesting that a Cardassian would go from inspecting the planet that they're planning to take with everything that will be on it to, if you leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. That doesn't sound very Cardassian.
I get the impression they have bigger things to worry about, right? I get the impression that what we have here is, you know, when people were doing the paperwork, when people were like handing over planets and exchanging territory, they weren't really considering this. I mean, how many inhabitants are we talking about in terms of this colony? It feels like it's a couple of thousand or something like that at most.
Yeah, I don't think it's much.
Yeah, and on the entire planet, even if the Kardashians want to build kind of like a super base on the planet, right, they can just build it somewhere else. It's quite easy to give these guys a wide berth, and I suspect that, you know, this is just paperwork, you know, people trying to follow the letter of the law in terms of the treaty rather than the actual stuff that's going on. And look, at the end of the day, these guys have to renounce their Federation citizenship and effectively stay at the mercy of their new new landlords, for want of a better word. So it feels like a satisfactory conclusion overall.
You think? You like it? You're good with it?
Well, I mean, I just feel it's pragmatic, but the practical situation is that, look, unless you believe the Kardashians are bloodthirsty and they're going to come in and actually have a need to take out this small village, then it's not even worth their while, right?
No, it wouldn't be. The only thing I would think is, once you said, well, you know, why doesn't the Cardassians take the other side of the planet and they keep theirs? But obviously, in their minds, what's going to happen in about 100 years as the Cardassians get closer and closer and closer and decide that they want our area after all? And they give us this little plot of land and reservations again. So it'd be better that the Cardassians just stay off the planet completely. But by doing this, it sets up for all the other colonies that are under Cardassian landlordship, I guess you could call it. And that's why the Maquis is born, because of that arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it makes sense for the Maquis storyline later that this is just one of those. But in DS9, do we ever see a Native, an Indian? You wouldn't know. I'm sorry, I'm looking at her, asking her, do we ever see it? I don't think she's ever watched more than a couple episodes of DS9, but do we ever see a Native Indian in DS9 as a Maquis?
I thought in the Maquis, as they set up the Maquis and they go down to various planets and eventually, what's his name? Cal Hudson, is it?
Yeah.
Forms kind of the resistance movement. I thought that at that point he had Native Americans with him. But that makes this sense. This is just my memory going back many years.
Right. And, you know, and I'm curious why Chakotay decided to join the Maquis, since he wasn't on this colony. He was from Earth.
But it sounds like there's obviously more than one colony, right?
Yeah.
But on top of that, there must be more than one, there must be more than one Native American colony in a way, but that sounds terrible, because it feels like they've all had to be, this is like the furthest away from Earth you could be, like, mm-hmm. on the ground, so it's like next to a border. It feels like they've all been really pushed out.
Segregated? So
you wonder why they... the chances of two independent colonies being in the same place, in the same direction, right next to the Cardassian space, and they have been, traded away. I think that makes it really, really unfortunate, right? One's a mistake. Two's very much, you start getting paranoid about people actually trying to get rid of you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because, and I think of B'Elanna. I don't understand her motivations for joining the Cardassians. Or, no, I'm sorry, joining the Maquis against the Cardassians. I mean, what would a Klingon need anything unless she's just fighting against Starfleet? Okay. Okay, so it's decided that they're just going to stay on the planet. The Cardassians are going to leave them alone, and Anthwaro was right. Picard was sent to erase a very old stain of blood. Oh, and we get to say goodbye to Wesley for now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the Traveler does say he's going to begin his study with these people. So, yeah, I like it. All right. Did I miss a lot? No? James, what do you think?
No, not from my side.
Wow. We only did that in an hour and 10 minutes. See? I told you it would be about 30 minutes or so. Okay. That's how I got him to sign up. I said each one of our shows would be about a half hour, maybe 45 minutes, and sometimes they go as long as 2 hours. when it takes me a while to get back upstairs. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, my palatial.
It's my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hey. We all do it. Okay. So, all right. Then I guess it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best you've ever seen in your life. Oh, just, the best. So why don't you start us off? Give us your ending thoughts and your final rating.
It was interesting. It was interesting that the Native Americans get to stay, because in history they were told to move, they were forced to move and move and move and move again to give the white man more land. So I'm wondering how history would be if we would have just left them alone. Where would I be? Where would Louis be?
Italy.
It's just interesting. Would I be in England where my grandparents were from, or where my grandfather is from, or would I be in Sicily where my grandmother's from? Mm. It's kind of interesting.
Yep. And we sometimes have debates on who's better, Italians or Sicilians. And she doesn't realize that we're the ones kicking them with our boot. So,
whatever.
Okay. So, okay. On a scale of 1 to 5, what would you give this?
Oopsie.
I thought it was very, very interesting, and I would give this a 5 because I liked it.
Hmm. 5 out of 5 for the misses. Okay. James, let me see. Okay, James, how about you? Where do you think you're at with this?
I mean, okay, from my perspective, I think I'm coming in like this as an average TNG episode. Right, so it's, you know, it's certainly not bad. I'm left a little bit disappointed with the Wesley arc and how they choose to finish it. And then the fact that when they then pick it up later on, right, they don't even, they almost try to not even mention this part, right? There's no mention of the Traveler going forward after this episode. There's no mention of anything that happens in Wesley's life at this point going forward, which kind of like makes it a little bit disappointing, and it almost feels like they're trying to kind of, you know, erase the events of this particular episode. I mean, overall, I'm happy that they are doing this kind of like soft setup, both for the thread that happens in DS9 with the Maquis in season 2, or later on in season 2, and into you know, we get it kind of going through into season 3 and 4, I believe. And then also provides a launch pad, right, for Chakotay and others for into Voyager as well. So, yeah, I kind of feel that this is it's kind of like a strangely pivotal episode that touches a lot of stuff, right? It's the end of the Wesley arc. It's the end of the Traveler arc. It's the beginning of the Maquis to a certain extent, beginning of Voyager. Yet it doesn't feel as grand, I don't think, as it should, or that it probably deserves. I mean, maybe they could have, or maybe they should have, like, introduced like a bigger storyline and tried to make this more of a standout, like, two-parter with all of the ideas that they had. It might have been like better to like to beef it up rather than to just kind of like try to slip it in. We obviously have preemptive strike in a couple of weeks' time as well, and it's kind of very possible that the ideas from that episode and the ideas from this episode could have been merged. But you know, as it stands, I kind of I land at this being kind of average TNG, which, you know, for me, it's kind of coming in at a 3 out of 5.
I got that one, didn't I? Some, you know, I like to try and guess at your ratings, and I got that one. Okay. Well, I'll see if I got mine right. This, like I said, this is one of my favorite episodes. I like the idea of we're just about ready to displace these people again. And as it turns out, they get to keep their land that they cherish so much. Thanks to Diane here, I also appreciate the native culture, and I'm with her. We have about, 30 dream catchers in the house? But you know something I was thinking? I need to get a little one and put it in J4's crib.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. J4 is our new grandchild. Have we talked about that, James?
Okay. I we spoke about when the little one arrived.
Yeah.
I think. I'm pretty sure we did. It was very quick, though, because we had guests on the show. But I'm not aware of, wasn't aware of names or anything like that. But how is everyone doing?
Oh, he's okay. He's a little fussy. And, you know, she's handling it alone right now. You know, the father isn't quite in the picture yet. And you know, he's got some things to sort out. No reason to go into it, but he will be back in the picture really soon. Until then, I did not think that she would be handling motherhood very well. I thought she was too immature. She can't raise fish. But yet she's going to raise a baby. And I'll tell you something, I've been very pleasantly surprised. I do have a couple things that I butt heads with her about. Things that I think that she needs to change about how she, not so much raises him, but like, you know, how to potter his bottom. That type of thing. But that's minor. But no, she's doing really well. And I really wasn't interested in having another baby in the house. You know, we were looking forward to just being, you know, we call ourselves GAM parents. Because I'm Gampa and she's Gamma, like Gamma Quadrant. Aha. But so he's our GAM child, you know. But every day he lives with us because she lives with us, and she needs us to babysit while she works. So Diane here takes the majority of the babysitting because I said I don't want to babysit. I didn't want to do this, but. No, I've taken a little bit, like, I'll feed him, I'll take him off her hands for a few minutes and, you know, go take a shower or something and then come back and you got him. Like, the other day, she watched him till almost 4 o'clock in the morning after going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, she, you know, 20 hours up, and a lot of it was taking care of baby. So, Gamma here is doing a wonderful job. And I think I need to step up a little more. I agree. So, but anyway, yeah, he's fun. I like holding him. I like talking to him. I manipulate his head. And I like he answers questions with a yes or a no. And every time I do that, he looks at me like, what do you think you're doing? I put him on his feet. And believe it or not, I mean, it's just instinct, but he appears to be putting one foot in front of the other, and this boy is a month and 18 days old. So 1 month, 18 days today, and yet he seems, I'm not bearing weight, too much weight on his feet, you know, I don't want to snap his legs, but yet he does seem to put one foot in front of the other and try to walk. So I don't know, maybe it's just me wishful thinking, but it sure looks like it. Okay, so anyway, there was a tangent there. So I mentioned the Dominion War and how did Dorvan 5 come out? Did they join the Maquis or were they spared? They probably just did the non-aggression treaty with the Dominion. You stay away from us. We'll just stay here and, you know, celebrate our land. I like the introduction of the Indian culture, the beliefs and the practices. It's like I said earlier, I can't imagine why the Indians were ever on in the beginning. It just, but I'm glad they were. Okay, so anyway, I'm with Diane at a 5 because I like the native culture, and so I'm at a 5. I'm good. So, all right, well, I want to thank my princess, Di, for coming on. And, I don't know, maybe in about 15, 20 years, we'll have her on again if we go into Voyager.
So, Voyager Episode 1, then.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. She'll be here for Episode 1. She just mouthed, am I going to be alive then? Because I don't think I will be. There ain't no way I'll be alive in 15, 20 years. No one in my family has ever went past 69 except Uncle Frank. He went to 93. That's because he ate his Italian food that he cooked at his restaurant. So Yeah. I ate his Italian food at his restaurant, and I gained so much weight, he was thin as a rail. But, okay. I guess that's it, right? We got Wesley moping around a little bit, and now he's happy as a lark, whatever a lark is.
I think it's a type of bird.
Are they happy? The extra whistles. So, anyway, I guess that's it. So, James, you have anything else you want to say?
No. Join us again next time, right?
Yes, join us again next. Oh, it's time for him to go to bed. That's why he wants to finish. Yeah, because what time is it there now?
No, it's only 9:30.
Okay. So join us next time as we review episode number 21, and that's going to be Firstborn. And I'm going to try and get the Klingon on for that, Brian Detamore. So everyone, take care and good night.
And good night.
Say good night, Diane.
Good night, all.
Good night. All right. Cool, James. You can stop the recording if you want.
Okay, I'm going to press the big stop record button. Okay, cool. I was completely blindsided.